Okay, we'll go ahead and Representative Kelly, if you'd like to present your bill. First of all, I will move that House File 1017 be approved and put on the general register. Go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Members, House File 1017 is kind of a just a mechanics bill that will allow the city of Red Wing and the state to convey some land back to private ownership. It is operated as a municipal golf course for a number of years. The city has to do a lot of maintenance. It will save the city about $200,000 a year in maintenance, but it would continue to operate as a recreational facility, which was some of the concerns to people. But I have here Mr. Brian Peterson from the city of Red Wing, who will explain the bill in a little more detail. Thank you.
Okay, sir, if you'd like to state your name for the record, and go ahead. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Brian Peterson. I'm the planning director with the city of Red Wing, and I'm pleased to be here on behalf of the city to testify in support of House Bill 1017. As a means of addressing a significant budgetary challenge that Red Wing is facing, our city council is considering and evaluating all opportunities and possibilities to reduce expenditures while still trying to keep our service levels, you know, at reasonable levels. And one of the options that we're considering is conveying the municipally owned golf course, Mississippi National Golf Course, to the private sector. A proposed sale of this nature would result in reducing budgetary pressure on the city without reducing service levels, because it would still be operated as a golf course and open to the public. So a portion of the property that Mississippi National Golf Course is built on was declared surplus state property in the 1970s and was acquired by the city at that time. And in analyzing the potential for the sale of the golf course to a private entity, it came to our attention that some potential ambiguity exists in conveying the property. This legislation clarifies that ambiguity by stating that the property can be conveyed by the city for recreational purposes and puts any proposed sale on more solid foundation. The second piece of the bill addresses our road access to Mississippi National Golf Course. The primary access to the golf course is off of Highway 61. It is constructed by the city of Red Wing, operated by the city of Red Wing, but it's located on state property via an easement. And that easement is revocable. So it represents, again, another ambiguity to our potential buyer of the golf course, because this easement's revocable and it represents the main access to the golf course. And in addition, that roadway, it's in addition to the access to the golf course, it's part of our overall street network now. We've put major investment in that street and provides access to recreational resources and other neighborhoods in the city of Redlands. So it's a real issue for us to have an easement that's revocable. So House File 1017 will address both of those issues, and in this case it would convey the roadway to the city of Red Wing to be maintained as a street right away. So thanks a lot for the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Okay, I'm going to formally call the meeting to order. We have a quorum now, so let's do that. And if we could just get a quick approval of the minutes. Representative Nelson, did you get a chance to look those over?
I move approval of the minutes from the meeting of March 10th.
Okay, any additions or corrections to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, minutes are approved. Now we'll proceed. I'm going to renew my motion that House File 1017 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. And then Representative Scalzi, you had a question. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is probably my favorite golf course that I go to. I just think it's a gem, Mississippi National. And I'm just wondering if you can't make it, if it's a drag on your budget, why would it not be a drag on the budget of the proposed purchaser? And I'm wondering, I guess the second part of that is the purchaser the same person that's currently operating it? And as we've talked to in another committee, we've talked to the IRRRB about the amount of money that they lose on their golf course up there. So I'm just kind of curious, will this really be a golf course forever, or how is this going to take away that possibility?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Kelly.
And Representative Scalzi. The owner, the current owner is the operator that has operated the golf course from inception. So that's I think that's a very good sign. And really, this is the issue of the cities is the maintenance of the streets and the access area. Mr. Peterson can maybe talk to that, but that's what they will be relieving the pressure of there. Otherwise, the golf course will operate as it always has.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
And Representative Salty, another response to that is that by the golf course private entity owning the property, they're also able to refinance current financing that they have in place, and that's a major element so that they can stretch out payments and cover their operations. So there's a financing mechanism here that's involved too.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I got a couple of questions. Representative Scalzi kind of hit on the one of mine. But the first one has to do with employees. Currently, there are no employees for the city that work this. This is operated. The employees there are employees of the existing company that's operating the golf course. That's the first question.
Mr. Peterson?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Member Nelson, the golf course management is operated privately now and with their own employees. Our city is responsible for some, I guess what we call some capital projects in the way the management agreement works now. For example, the golf cart ways and some of those things the city's responsible for keeping in good maintenance. So there are times when city employees are involved in that aspect of the current operation.
Okay. Representative Nelson, a follow-up?
The follow-up, I guess the second question I had to do with when you talked about the road access, and I thought I heard you just say that by doing this, we'd be relieving the city of responsibility to maintain that road, but then I also thought I heard you say that the city's taking over, trying to getting a permanent easement to that road, and so I guess I just want a clarification. This road that goes in there, you said accesses other neighborhoods. I think I heard you say that also. So is the city going to be maintaining access to those and maintenance of those roads, or is that going to be the responsibility passed over to the golf course operator?
Now, Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, there's different roads going on here, and that's we probably confused you. The main access road, which is called Golf Links Drive, that we have our revocable easement on, it's owned and operated as a city street, and we expect to maintain that street in perpetuity. What we're speaking to are some other, paths and gravel roadways and some other access that just accesses the golf course itself that would be turned over to the new ownership of the golf course.
Representative Nelson.
And I guess the last question I have, and this kind of touched on what Representative Scalzi talked about, was I'm reading here in the overview we got here, and that this is going to be maintained as a recreational facility, but what happens down the road with this company if they can't make it? Is there any guarantee that this is going to stay recreational land or a golf course, or can 5-10 years down the road they decide, well, we can't make it as a golf course and now we're going to sell this off and develop it into housing development or something else, that basically we're giving a huge windfall if it would redeveloped into a housing facility or housing development. a big windfall to these owners and taking away that recreational opportunity for the citizens of the state and the city of Red Wing.
Mr. Peterson or Representative Kelly? Neither.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, that is a major issue with the city council also, and there's a couple of things the city council is considering in this whole analysis is, and we're in negotiations, but we're looking at a reverter clause of some sort that if the golf course no longer operates, the land will come back to the city. The other thing we're looking at is we've got other, we're looking at some permanent conservation easements that would be deeded to the city to make sure that we've got cross-country ski trails and hiking trails and a lot of different recreation that occurs on the golf course, and we're intending to maintain those public rights through easements.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions from the members? Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak for or against this bill? Okay. Seeing no further questions, I will renew my motion that House File 1017 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. House File 1017 is a recommended pass and placed on the general register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Appreciate the conversation support.
Representative Lanning, welcome to the committee. Okay. Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 789 for passage and to go to the House floor.
Okay, thank you. Representative Lanning, welcome to the committee, and please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have worked extensively with community action agencies around the state, particularly up in our part of the state. And they are very, very important service to people who have great needs. And they particularly, I think, have been on the front line in addressing issues related to poverty, something that I've worked on extensively. And we discovered that they have been having increasing difficulty in having available and affordable insurance, health insurance for their staff. And particularly that's been the case in Greater Minnesota. Now, when you look at existing statute, community action agencies are considered municipalities, basically government, when it comes to liability insurance. But experts tell us that we need further clarification in statutes to make staff of community action agencies eligible for the public employee insurance program that's available to local units of government. And so House File 789 just simply inserts into statute that community action agencies shall be eligible for inclusion with the public employee insurance program. And so with that brief introduction, we have a couple of experts who can speak more directly to the needs for this bill.
Okay, if you'd like to state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Arnie Anderson. I'm the Executive Director of the Statewide Association of Community Action Agencies. I would just like to provide a 90-second introduction to the Minnesota's Community Action Network. In your handout, you have a description of the bill, but then also on the second page is a map showing the statewide network of community action agencies in Minnesota. And the particular point that we would like to make is that community action agencies are private nonprofit corporations. It's the only statewide network of nonprofit social service agencies in the state. It's local control, and the thing that makes community action agencies unique is that by law they're required to have one-third low-income citizens on their board. In terms of the bill today itself, we worked with the executive branch, we worked with the Department of Human Services and Management and Budget to try to find an administrative solution to this, and it was recommended that we insert this definition into statute so that it's just clear for everybody. And with that, I will stand for questions or yield to Mike Thorsteinson, the Executive Director of Three Rivers Community Action, who can speak just briefly about their experience in trying to obtain health coverage.
Okay, why don't we have testimony first from Mr. Thorsteinson, and then we'll go on to questions from there. Please state your name. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Mike Thorsteinson, and I'm the director of Three Rivers Community Action, which is in the Goodhue, Rice, Wabasha County area. And you have a handout which shows medical insurance cost history for Three Rivers Community Action. And I just have jumped through three quick points. If you look at January 1st, 2006, we had no annual deductible or copays, and an annual premium was $4,200 for a single and $9,000 for a family. Then I'm going to take you to the middle of the page, and you look January 1st, 2008. We went to a $2,500 deductible for a single and a $5,000 deductible for a family, and the premium went from to $5,280 for a single and $12,120 for a family. Then I'll take you to January 1st, 2010, which is the second column up from the bottom. Again, it maintains the $2,500 and $3,500 deductible, but the annual premium for a single is now $8,700, and a family plan is $27,312. This is, there's a group of 26 people participating in the group, of which, oh, the breakdown can change from day to day, because technically this is a group plan, but it is all age-banded and age-rated, so if somebody turns one of those golden ages, 40, 50, 60, et cetera, their premium does jump up a little bit during the course of the year. So it's a cost management, cost containment problem. So essentially, the last time we were able to get a competitive bid was 2005. Otherwise, we've had to go with the same insurance plan. And this is not unique to community action agencies around the state of Minnesota. So it is an issue around greater Minnesota, and I will stop there. Also, one last comment. Our premiums went from about $130,000 a year 5 years ago to $360,000 a year right now, which impacts the employment capacity of our organization. It's probably, you know, 5-6 jobs that are impacted just by that increase over 5 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Scalzi, you had a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if this is for the board members or if this is for the people that you serve.
It's for the staff of the organization. It's not for board members or for the people we serve. Board members don't qualify for insurance under this plan, and people we serve do not qualify for insurance under this plan.
Follow up.
And then as a follow-up, I'm wondering how many staff there is on this map, and if and why it's only for outstate and not metro.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scalzi, statewide community action employs about 5,000 people. We do not anticipate that anywhere near that number would exercise an option to participate in PEAT. I know that the purview of this committee is insurance and health insurance, and so I'll just generalize that in the greater metropolitan area, it's much easier to get competitive bids than it is to obtain competitive bids in greater Minnesota. And so this bill before you today basically is to offer one additional option for greater Minnesota And we don't even anticipate that everyone is likely to participate.
Okay. Any other questions from the members? The chair has a couple questions, and you may have answered this and I missed it. Who is the plan currently with? How many eligible members are there for the plan, and how many are actually participating? I guess would be the three parts. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, there are 28 community action agencies around the state, and each has their own separate plan. So this merely offers each individual corporation one additional option.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess the question that what Representative Scalzi asked, and I didn't understand it that way when it was explained to me in my office, that this only covers outstate or greater Minnesota. I mean, it doesn't, the way I read it, it doesn't delineate between that. So if a Minneapolis or a St. Paul agency that you've got listed here on the map wanted to participate, could they also participate, or is this just for greater Minnesota?
Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, I'm sorry if I was confusing in my answer. You're correct. This language makes everyone eligible. Our guess is that as a practical matter, the metropolitan area would be able to obtain more competitive bids in the private market.
Okay. Any additional questions?
Just to follow up, so I hear this right. So this would cover everybody that works for one of these agencies, whether you're Minneapolis, St. Paul, metropolitan area, or greater Minnesota. It's not just for outstate. It's just that there's a better market here, so they got a better chance in the metro area to get competitive bids.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Is there anybody in the audience that wishes to speak for or against this bill? Seeing none, is there any additional questions from the members? Representative Scalzi.
I'm just thinking through this, and we've had so much testimony and so much debate in the past regarding school district employees, and I'm wondering, I guess maybe it's not a question for you, it's a question for another area, but because the school district employees are telling us that they can't get good health insurance rates outstate either. And so a lot of them aren't even purchasing any health insurance because they can't afford it. And I'm wondering if this isn't something that we should do for them as well, or had you thought in the past of tying in with the school district employees?
Representative Scalzi, just as we may have, or are we having PEEP in tomorrow? We're going to have PEEP in tomorrow and talk, and maybe that's a discussion that we can have at that time, and probably not one for the testifiers here. So, okay. Any additional questions? Hearing none, Representative McFarland, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to renew my motion to pass House File 789 and move it to the General Register.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion does prevail and is recommended to pass and placed on the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you. Okay. The next bill we have up, House File 954, Representative Fabian. General Register. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 954 be recommended for passage and moved to the General Register. Is that where it's going, Representative Fabian?
Yes, that's my understanding, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian, welcome to the committee. Would you please tell us about your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We try not to take too much of your time. We know it's a very busy time here. Where we come from, we would call this harvest season, so the combines are rolling. This bill, House File 954, is a bill that's specific to Kitson County. If you know your Minnesota geography, you know that Kitson County is the furthest northwest county in the state of Minnesota. It borders Manitoba to the north and North Dakota to the west. It's a very large county. It's sparsely populated. It has a very high percentage of state-owned land. And the county commissioners there have asked me to carry this bill forward. What this bill will do is it will allow them to combine the positions of recorder, auditor, treasurer, and it also will allow them to be able to hire that position as opposed to having it voted on. There are some provisions in the bill that assure openness and transparency and accountability. If you take a look at the bill, subdivision 4, at the bottom of page 1, line 1.22, it says, before the adoption of the resolution to provide for the appointment of the county recorder and county auditor slash treasurer, the county board must publish a proposed resolution notifying the public of its intent to consider the issue once each week for 2 consecutive weeks in the official publication of the county. Following that publication and prior to formally adopting the resolution, the county board shall provide an opportunity at its next regular meeting for public comment relating to the issue. Then it continues, after the public comment opportunity at the same meeting or the subsequent meeting at a subsequent meeting, the Kitson County Board of Commissioners may adopt a resolution that provides for the appointment of the county recorder and county auditor treasurer as permitted in this section. The resolution must be approved by at least 80% of the members of the county board. And then under B it says, within 30 days after the second publication, a petition requesting a referendum may be filed with the county auditor treasurer. This petition must be signed by at least 10% of the registered voters of Kitson County. What that does is it allows for people who may have some concerns about this to file a petition to have this situation brought to the voters. I have a couple of testifiers here today from the Kitson County Board of Commissioners, and with that I've finished with my portion for the time being. And
okay, if the testifiers, if you'd like to state your name, and then go ahead and tell us what you
have. Hey, my name is Dr. Joel Bavette. I'm chairman of the Kitson County Board. I've been on the Kitson County Board for 24 years, starting my 25th, and I have 3 more years of taking care of the citizens of Kitson County.
And I'm John Anderson. I've been on the Kitson County Board for about 10 years, and I'm the vice chair. And Joe introduced himself as a doctor. I'm a farmer, hence the tie versus the wind shirt. So, anyway, I guess we're ready for some testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. A little sidelight when he talked about the tie. My minister, I walked in one day into church, and he said, "I just lost $10," and I said, "Why was that?" "I bet you didn't own a tie." So I had a tie on that day. I don't wear a tie very often, but I'm glad to be here. It's a long drive down here. We had an enjoyable time coming down. The reason we are here today is to ask for special resolution to have the officers of auditor, treasurer, and recorder appointed. On February 15th, the county board passed the resolution to proceed in this manner with all members voting for that resolution. In a small county such as ours, it's important to have flexibility to assign duties to administrators as best suits the needs of local government. Currently, our administrators wear many hats. Our assessor also maintains our computer system, our emergency manager is our environmental officer, and zoning chairman, our auditor treasurer, is our secretary of the board and performs all of our human resource functions and other administrative duties. In our county, along with other counties, the engineer, the assessor, social service director, environmental officer, veteran service officer are non-elected offices. They're administrators within the system. The main reason we are looking into doing this is that the officer of auditor, treasurer, and recorder have changed over the years. The duties we have asked our elected officials to have also changed. By statute, they have certain duties to perform, and the county board has no say in the matter. We have had a great relationship with the officers over the years, and they perform many functions that are not required of them. We feel it is time to be able to change the job descriptions to have it in line with what the office is really doing. In other elected positions in the county, the sheriff and the attorney, the education requirements are in place. Our present auditor has informed us that she is retiring in 2 years. It is midterm, and we would have to appoint someone at that time. That is why the timing is perfect for us to seek this legislation. Our small counties are in need of reorganization to look at saving money. In the future, we are looking at combining with other counties to utilize each other's assets. The offices are pointed, this would be easier to accomplish. Following are some of the reasons that Kitson County, it fits for Kitson County. The positions are administrative in nature and not policymakers. The duties can be tailored to the position and its demands. These positions have changed over time and have become much more technical in nature. Appointments to these positions would allow for development of educational and experience requirements for holding the position, which are currently not required by statute in the elected positions. An example of why we need reorganization duties is as follows. If a citizen wants to purchase a piece of land, they must first go to the recorder's office to get the description, then to the assessor to get the value, then to the auditor to get the taxes, and then to the treasurer to pay those taxes. We are looking at setting up for county departments that can that will be functionally orientated so that this could be done in one office. The present system was set up over 100 years ago, and each office having duties set by statute. We have not taken this issue lightly. Our only issue in this is to provide the citizen better service and saving taxpayers money. We discussed this with the present auditor and treasurer and recorder at length, and they both concurred with it. It is the way to go. The discussions have been ongoing for a number of years. I have spoken with several citizens of Kitson County. I have not had one that is opposed to the action we are taking. To date, several counties, about 27, have gone from elected to appointed offices. In our area, Polk County, Beltrami, Hubbard, and Cass have done so, and the counties around us, Roseau and Marshall, have talked with us extensively about doing the same. I respectfully ask for your support of House File 954. On behalf of Kitson County, I'd like to thank you for considering the request. None of these changes will be easy, but we feel that it will give us the best opportunity for the kind of good government the public expects. We would attempt to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Levitt. First of all, before we go on to questions, I would like to introduce the ninth grade students from Kirkhoven, Murdoch, Sunburg High School. They're here today participating in the Minnesota Historical Society Capital Historic Sites Voice of the People. So welcome to our committee. We're glad to have you here today. We hope you enjoy the day, and thanks for coming. So, okay, Mr. Anderson, were you going to add anything before we go to questions? Or
no, not at this time.
Okay, thank you. Then we'll go ahead with questions. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions. One, are these positions, do they currently hold voting rights on the board and in the organization? And two, about how many counties across the state have already done that? Thank you.
Representative Fabian or one of the testifiers, go ahead.
I can't, Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, I can't answer the question about the voting rights, but Joe presented in his information, I believe the number is 27 counties are doing this at this time.
I think there's 27 positions that have changed in 23 counties, okay? And no, they do not.
No, they don't.
Okay. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we see these kinds of bills all the time, and in my opinion, we should allow you to do this. You have a reverse referendum if people don't like the decision. Is it state action that tells you that you need two different people, or could those offices be combined in one person in a smaller county?
Mr. Levitt?
Well, we have combined the auditor-treasurer position. Now, the recorder, I'm not...
No, that there isn't.
They would remain separate positions as far as the auditor, treasurer, and the recorder. It's just that they both have to be, right now they are both elected positions. Right. And we thought, well, as long as we're going to do the auditor, treasurer, because she's going to be retiring midterm and the timing is good, we thought with the recorder we could, just all do that one at the same time.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and again, Representative Scalzi stole one of my questions, but we see a couple of these every year or every legislative session, and I guess the question I have for you, more for Representative Fabian, have you talked to other members of your caucus, because while these seem non-controversial and I have supported them in the past. We do have a few members, particularly of your caucus, that are very much against this, and I think Representative Westrom has a bill on the general, or not on the general, but that has been introduced that would put these all back to elected positions. So I'm just basically giving you a heads up to be aware that there are people that oppose this, taking away the rights of the citizens to vote, and you'll probably hear all that. So I'm just more of a heads up, and as you're going forward with this, I don't have a problem with it. It's, I understand, smaller counties and especially some of the outstate counties that need to combine these positions to be more efficient, and I do support, have supported them in the past.
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, thank you. It's nice that there's someone around here to watch out for us freshmen and look, keep our backs, you might say. I have talked to Representative Westrom, and he's told me his position. I've talked to a number of other members of my caucus, and for the most part, there's pretty good support for this. I don't have any sort of, you know, numbers or whatever, but I'm confident, particularly in the rural caucus members. You know, as I've said many times throughout this session in different committees and different places to different people, our small rural counties, they're not small in terms of their geography, but they are small in terms of their populations and the fiscal resources that are available to them. They are also extremely responsive to the people that they represent. These two gentlemen, as elected county commissioners, know so many people in their counties. They're friends with them. They go to the same coffee shops. They hunt deer together and whatever things that we do up there. And I think, as I said in my opening comments, that this bill does provide for openness and transparency. And I think that there's also a significant component in this bill that has to do with responsibility and with the 10% of the voters wanting to have some sort of a referendum. It allows for that. And these people are responsive to the people that they represent, and I think that's the reason why they're bringing this forward. It's not because they don't respect their right to vote. It's because they do respect the fact that they have a very, very tight budget to watch over, and this gives them the best tools that they need to do the job that they think is best.
Okay. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to the commissioners for coming a long way for this bill. I support the bill. I think you should have the right to do this. You have all the right language in there to make sure that if there's some sort of outcry, people could change the result. But I just wanted to take advantage of your presence here, especially after such a long distance, to just ask a general question that we've all been hearing a lot about and probably scratching our heads on. You know, the trend, or at least the talk around here, is more consolidation, particularly among counties, particularly among rural counties or sparsely populated counties. Could you just give us, I know this is maybe an impossibly broad question, but it's interesting, and especially, Doctor, you've been on the, you've been a commissioner for many years. Do you think we should be or are moving towards the point where we might have actual consolidation of counties, or at least county boards, that the lines wouldn't disappear, of course, there'd still be a Kitson County, but where maybe there would be a complete merger of the governments of, say, you know, a couple surrounding counties? Do you think that is a good thing? Is that where we're headed? It's just a discussion point, since we're always looking for ways to innovate, and that's something that's come up.
I love it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Simon, it's ironic you asked that question. 24 years ago, when I got elected to the county board, I said, is there a reason to have an auditor in every county? Is there a reason to have a recorder in every county? But state law says there is. Consolidation of counties, I don't see that in a real near future. I don't think it's a bad idea. But consolidation of offices, services, things, we already have it. Our court system right now, we do not have a court reporter in Kitson County. She is located in Rosa County. We have many collaborations in social services that we work county with many counties with it. If you're all familiar with landfills in Minnesota, Kitson County has the best landfill in the state of Minnesota. It's something to be proud of. We're very proud of the fact that it's run like it should be. And that's in consolidation with Marshall County. They own it with us. And we service all the way over to Kuching County and all the way into about halfway across the state of North Dakota and a little bit south of the Canadian border. We service all that area. We are constantly looking at ways that we can combine with other counties to join in services. Marshall County has just recently joined with Norman County to do part of their social services. That's quite a jump. They jump over two counties to do that because Norman and Red Lake are, Polk and Red Lake are in between them. But that's where they've gone. In the future, we think that we'll probably be looking at combining a lot of social service offices. We're not large enough right now. One of the main reasons I didn't mention it, we're just not large enough in Kitson County to have our own human services officer. We just can't afford it. So all that falls on the auditor. If we had an auditor that was elected that said to us, here's my job duties, I'm not going to do that anymore, Kitson County would be forced with having to find somebody because that part of the business is getting to be so complex to keep the human services going and human resources, I mean, so.
Yeah, she serves as human resource director, she serves as the auditor, she serves as the treasurer, and she serves as the board secretary. So those are kind of some widespread duties, and you know, that's what happens in Kitson County. And as far as, you know, it's kind of a personal opinion, I think, as to what, where we're going with the consolidations and stuff like that, but I can see in the future probably county boards being consolidated. But as far as county offices and stuff, you know, the geography, as far as the distances to travel for the citizens and stuff, can be a real problem, you know, up in our sparse area anyway. So, yeah, we're looking at ways to, well, we have to, we're looking at ways to save, plain and simple.
Thanks.
Thank you. Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, I'm just curious. I know there's other counties that would like to do this. How does AMC feel about this, the Association of Counties?
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, Representative McFarland, I'm not sure of their position on this. Maybe Joe or John can answer that question. I've not gotten any feedback from them.
I don't think there's any opposition to it, but we're kind of wondering too why AMC maybe isn't taking a stronger position in maybe changing the statute so that counties can just automatically do that if they want, you know, with approval of their citizens. But mm-hmm. It's I don't know why they haven't taken a stronger stand on it, to be honest with you.
If I may, Mr. Chair, they have not voiced any opposition to this to me either, Representative McFarland.
Okay. Ms. Dyson, maybe you could shed a little light for us on this subject.
Mr. Chair and Representative McFarland, the Association of Minnesota Counties has carried, or not carried, but promoted legislation in the past, in 2001 and again last year, supporting a change in the general law to provide basically what is in each of these special laws. In 2001, it passed out of the local government committee and was on the floor, and a member objected, and it was voted down. And that was a surprise to the association. And they haven't really pursued it on their own initiative since then. Some members have carried bills that would change the general law to make the same provisions. Last year in 2010 in the local government division, the amendment to take a special law and turn it into a general law failed in division. So it's been tried a few times, but what I have heard in testimony from members is that they like to see each bill, each county come in and explain their situation.
A follow-up, Representative McFarland, or okay. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll keep my comments relatively brief. The history on the background, and I fully concur with what the board chair suggested earlier, that taking a simple action of taking a deed for the transfer of property down and posting that into the public record would, for a number of years, require three or four stops. And having had experience in the industry, I always scratch my head saying, this is just the most bureaucratic thing. It's one hat in one office, walk down the hall, stand in line, go to another office. And so what the state did was they combined the offices of auditor and treasurer a number of years ago to help streamline that process. And with the Office of Recorder, who's basically responsible for all public documents that are posted in the public record in that county, I think that makes some sense to look at making that an appointed position, and the auditor treasurer as well. the one thing that piqued my interest was you talked about duty integration, and those weren't exactly the words that you used, Mr. Chair, but I thought that those were at least the essence of what you were looking at. Maybe you could speak to, are you thinking about maybe crossing over some of the duties that the treasurer and the auditor were doing? And then just how would that work if a referendum took place and you had to uncouple those and put those back into the traditional statutory requirements?
Dr. Leavitt.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, first of all, we would not take any of those steps until such time that we knew that it had passed. So, I mean, the reverse referendum, I believe, is a 30-day, they have a 30-day window, and then at the end of 30 days, if there's opposition, then it becomes law or becomes able to do that. If in the future the law changed, I'm not going to address that because I'm hoping that wouldn't happen. Okay. Yes, we're looking at integrating different duties among several offices, not necessarily just between recorder, auditor, treasurer. I guess, you know, I can only speak for myself when I say this. My vision is that in the auditor's office, she has two deputy auditors plus other employees working for her, and the way our office is set up in Kitson County, her office is in the middle. This side is the auditors. This side is the treasurer. So you go in two doors, but she's in control of both places. Those people are very capable individuals, and we're hoping that we would possibly move some of the duties into other people to give them to other people. The auditor still would have the responsibility of the overall office, but maybe wouldn't do all of the duties that she's doing today. Maybe would be doing another. Same with social services. There may be something we can put into that office that now is done somewhere else. And with all of the administrators. That's why we're here at this date, because with the pending resignation in 2 years, it'll give us a year and a half plus to look into how can we do some of this work. So, yes. I hope I answered your question.
Representative O'Driscoll, a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Board Chair. It does sound like you have you don't come here before us with an ill-thought plan. You have looked at it and you've figured out what your needs are, and that integration to provide better services is the goal of this. And so I thank you for your innovation in government.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Hancock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian.
Joe and John, right? Just philosophically, you know, I believe that the government closest to the people best serves the people. Ultimately, that gets down to the individual best serving himself through elections. So I have to reconcile the idea that to a certain extent we are taking control of elected positions from the individual. What would allow me to make that leap, so to speak, would be the reverse referendum option. I'm just curious if, and perhaps you don't know the answer to this, but if 23 counties basically have this, and I believe Beltrami is one myself that I live in that has it, have any of them ever tried to reverse that process and go back to an elected position that you know?
Dr. Leavitt. Chairman, Representative, just 1 second, let me look through my notes here. I believe,
Mr. Chair, if I ahead. To that point, please, if I may, Mr. Chair, sure. Maybe Ms. Dyson can help us with that question.
Ms. Dyson?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hancock, I don't know of any county that has tried to go back to an elected position, but in, I can't remember what year, but Pope County, there was a petition for a reverse referendum, at which time the county board decided that there wasn't enough support to proceed, and they didn't pursue the resolution, and they didn't go to referendum. They just decided to back off of it. But I don't know of a county that has gone from an appointed position back to elected.
I might add, too, that we didn't take that consideration lightly when we're taking the vote away from the people. I mean, I guess in my mind that is probably the one downside of doing this, is that you're taking the vote away from the people. But I guess on the other hand, in my mind, we there are so many more positives to that that I believe that this is what we need to do in our county.
Follow-up?
Just a quick follow-up. I basically probably agree with you. I was just curious if indeed, but what you're saying then, Ms. Dyson, might be that is the manner in which the people would try to reverse this, is that referendum process one that is, I guess I would need to look at the law to see what that would be, but if one had tried it but the board ruled that there wasn't enough, is it a certain amount of petitions or signature percentage that would require people to put that back on the agenda, so to speak, or
10%?
It's 10%.
Okay.
So in other words, the people would still have a recourse even 2 years down the road if they so desired.
Well, I don't know.
Representative Hancock, I think you guys are answering a different question than what Representative Hancock has asked. If this policy gets put into place, okay, and you do this for 10 years, what would be the process for undoing that and returning it back to the people? Representative Hancock, is that the question you're asking, please?
Yeah, I understand. This particular process is 30 days, but yes, exactly what you said, Representative Fabian. Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hancock, there again, I would assume that that would take some sort of legislative action again. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. Maybe Ms. Dyson can help us with that, please.
Ms. Dyson?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hancock, I think I'd like to take a time to look at the statute and see if there is a provision. It might well require some special legislation, but I'm not sure. That particular question has not come up before about how to go back to an elected position, so I've not had to answer that.
Good job. A new question. All right. Thank you. If you could maybe follow up and get back to us, that'd be great. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since these are non-voting positions, does the board have superior or superseding authority over these positions? And that might be to staff.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Dr.
And Representative Quam. The only way we have any jurisdiction over another elected official, they are elected the same as we are as county commissioners. They are on the same level. The only thing we control is their budget. We can limit their budget. We can not give them a budget. We can, but that's it. Their duties are set in statute. Those are the duties that they must perform. But because of the relationship and the smallness of our county, with all of our elected officials, with all of our administrators, we have a great working relationship. So is that... Hopefully that answers the question.
Representative Quam. Would these be, you know, since there are elective terms, would these appointments be for the same term of duration? Dr. Levitt.
Chairman, Representative, we haven't even thought about that, but I guess in reality, if you hire a person in any business, and they're doing a good job, and they're doing the job you hired them for, there would be no reason to have a term, I do not feel. When you're hiring, there are a few, our social service director and our engineer and assessor have, I believe it's 4-year appointments. That's set in statute, even though they're appointed, that's set in statute, I believe. You know, there may be more than that, but, and that's something that if we feel that we would do that, we would make those have appointments.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would feel more comfortable since these are positions with some authority or comparable standing that they be of the same duration. And therefore, it allows for a little more autonomy even though they are appointed by the board, some autonomy since they have some comparable authority, albeit different authority. That's just my two cents on this.
Okay, I'm not sure if there was a question there, but did anybody want to respond?
Well, thank you. I just made a note about that. Our intent is to talk with other counties that have already done this and get as much experience and as much information as we possibly can and then make good decisions, hopefully.
Thank you. Is there anybody in the audience that wishes to speak for or against this bill? Okay, seeing none. I'd like to thank Dr. Levitt and Mr. Anderson for coming down from Kitson County. I can tell that you guys take your job very seriously, and I hope the people of Kitson County understand that and appreciate the effort that you're putting in. You're doing a nice job of looking at all the functions of government and how can you streamline them, make them more efficient, be innovative in how you're doing things. And this is what we need every county in the state to be looking at. So thanks for help leading the way on that. And as a follow-up to Representative Nelson, he's not here right now, but my county, Maurer and Freeborn both, after seeing Representative Fabian's bill on the website last week, have contacted me about also looking into such legislation facing a number of the same issues that you're facing also. Representative Winkler, question?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, beware Representative Biskin's on this bill.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, again, I'll repeat what I said earlier. Maybe you weren't here. It's nice to have someone on my back. Thank you. I'd like to thank Joe and John for coming down. They travel 400 miles to come down here. They are passionate about what they do and the people that they represent. I'd also like to suggest that maybe we abolish the legislature and just put the Kitson County Commissioners in charge of this thing down here.
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative O'Driscoll renews his motion that House File 954 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails, and House File 974 is recommended and will be placed on the general register. Thank you.
I'd like to thank you folks and Representative Fabian for carrying the bill.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You bet. With that, our meeting is adjourned. Thank you, and have a great day, and enjoy your 45 minutes of Representative Scalzi. You get lunch today.